You ready?
Mm-hmm. All right, good morning. I will go ahead and call us to order for our regularly scheduled Board of Supervisors meeting on this Tuesday, March 3rd. We got to be getting close to spring, don't we?
Yeah.
One change before we move on to the agenda. We're going to move the first item on number 11, which is the CIP discussion, up to the top of our agency report simply because Leanne Harder has another appointment she's got to get to. With that, if everybody would please join the board as we honor America with the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you and good morning. First item is public comment number one. This is an opportunity for members of the public to address topics on today's agenda. We do have one person who has indicated they wish to speak, but we've agreed that we're going to hold it for the topic that they want to talk about. Is there anybody else wishing to address the board this morning? Seeing no one, we just had the picture that we just took was the presentation of the plaque from the Iowa Games to the Story County Board of Supervisors. We have Chuck Long with us today. Chuck, would you mind coming up and giving us a quick little report on what's going on with the Iowa Games while you're here? Just right to the table, just since we record it into the microphone.
Yep.
Yes, sir.
Right. I know about microphones. I can deal with that.
Okay.
Good morning, everybody.
Good morning. Good morning.
I have to find out, though. I always got to know my surroundings. Are there any Iowa Hawkeye fans in here? All right.
And then Chuck, and then you're on a short leash.
And then the Cyclone fans.
Absolutely.
Now, they had a great win yesterday. Holy cow. Down 21.
Yeah.
You probably know, I'm hanging around with the great Jim Hallahan a lot. So he's Mr. Iowa State, I'm Mr. Hawkeye. We go back and forth pretty good. I've been very quiet this year because Iowa State has had our number. So I've been very humble this year. But Jim and I have you guys know about Jim. Jim built the Iowa Sports Foundation to what it is today, to be honest with you. And I marvel every day I'm with him. I go, how did you build this to this point? And he said, hey, a lot of hard work and just, beating the pavement and just hustling, and that's what he is. I joined briefly. I want to leave some brochures of what we do. If you're interested, just take one on the way out. But I joined the Iowa Sports Foundation as CEO and executive director in September. Literally hit the ground running. I also work for the Big Ten Network as an analyst, and I have a couple of shows with them, and I'm a game analyst on the weekend. So I really hit the ground running and tried to balance both during the fall, and we got through it. We've had a great we've had added new sponsors to our foundation. We've had some that up their levels. It's been really a positive fall and winter so far with our sports foundation. We're right in the middle of the Live Healthy Iowa 10-week wellness challenge, right in the middle of right at week 5. That's been going well. We've had over 20,000 people engaged in that, about 400 businesses engaged with our 10-week wellness challenge. That's a web-based program. We just finished up our winter games, our winter Iowa games, and had over 4,000 people involved with that over 6 weekends, primarily in the city of Dubuque and Cedar Rapids, but we've had a great turnout. Archery is the big hit this year, and pickleball. I'm over 50, and I want to be in the senior games this year in June. I want to try this game called pickleball. That's the rage, but we're right now kind of in between. March is a quiet month for us. No events scheduled. We have events every month except for March and October of the year. So this is a quiet month. We're getting ready and gearing up for the summer games, obviously, on Iowa State's campus. Even though I'm a Hawkeye, I love the footprint of the games on Iowa State's campus. I think it's a great location. It's centrally located. Iowa State has opened their doors for, since 1987 for the Iowa summer game or the summer Iowa games. And, my goal is to keep it there. I think it's great for young people to come to a campus as opposed to a city, so to speak. So that's what I like about a college campus. But anyway, we're going to gear up to start get organized for that, and that takes a while. I will go on a 100-stop media tour to promote that all over the state starting in April and May. So Jim Hallahan did that, and I want to do the same thing. I believe in getting out there and touching people, and as opposed to calling them on the phone. So that's something I want to do. The reason I'm here, obviously the main reason, is to present this plaque to you. You know, the Story County Board of Supervisors have been a longtime contributor to the Iowa Sports Foundation. Just received your check in the, recently for this year, and really appreciate your support of what we do, and hopefully it continues for a long time. I am not, again, I just mentioned, I'm not one to sit in a desk very long. I was in coaching for 18 years. I like to be out and about and active. You'll see my face quite a bit. If you ever have anything, questions, football sign, even you psych, even I've learned to become real good friends with the Cyclone family. So I know where my bread is buttered. So I will, if you want anything from me, signed footballs, autographs, whatever, pictures, I'll be glad to do it for you. I'm right down the road.
Okay.
Right down the road.
Well, you know, you're sitting or you're close to Julie Weeks there with the Ames Convention Bureau, and of course, we know how valuable the association with the Iowa Games have been for our community and tourism and so forth. So we wanted to make sure that we got her schedule at the time you were here, just so we could have another Cyclone just to can't gang up
very
on you.
Smart. Very smart. I know I'm surrounded, but that's okay.
Well, Chuck, we're so glad to have you at the helm of the Sports Foundation. It is such an important thing here in Iowa, and clearly here in Story County, we love the Iowa Games and everything that it means for the community. And you know, I'm always excited with somebody with as much adversity in your background, you know, not being able to get a real college degree, being able to accomplish what you've accomplished. I just think it's wonderful, and we're so glad you're here.
I love the dig. You know, I will say this as a sidebar. This is a unique state where everybody really gets along in this state. You know, we always root for Iowa State when we're not playing Iowa State, of course, and I'm sure vice versa. But it's really unique that way, and not every state's that way. So appreciate what you have, because I was in the state of Oklahoma. I was at the University of Oklahoma coaching, and Oklahoma and Oklahoma State hate each other. They just don't. They don't want the other team to win at anything. So it's really unique, I think, with Iowa as opposed to other states around here. So let's keep that going.
Absolutely. Well, thank you very much.
Thank you so much.
Thank you, guys. Thank you for having me.
You
appreciate
bet.
It.
Absolutely.
Okay.
Thanks for all you do.
Good. Okay.
Next item on our agenda is employee recognition. It's that time of year where we recognize years of service from our employees. And we had our employee recognition dinner Saturday night. And I said then, and I'll say now, you know, Story County is clearly a wonderful place to live and work. And Story County government absolutely fills the bill as I believe the finest county government in Iowa, and that is absolutely because of our employees. We are so fortunate to have outstanding employees, many of them long-term employees. We've got a gentleman sitting up here who didn't get enough after 30 years, and so he had to come back and work for Story County some more. And so with that, I just want to recognize the people who are hitting milestones in their years of service to Story County. At the five-year mark, Nicholas Brazino, David Swanson, Bo Hoppe, Tiffany Meredith, Christopher Erickson, David Rasmussen, Tyler Sparks, Shannon Ellis, and Vanna Beeson. At the 10-year mark, Wayne Schrickerath, Shelley Belisle, way to go, Shelley, Kathy Kenyon, Maria Greiser, Lucy Martin, and Clark Blue. 15 years, Jay Grismore, Tammy Gardner, Tammy Lehman, Michael Kennedy, Brett McLean, John Oshmussen, Lori Crouch. At 20 years, Connie Kenyon, Connie Torsdahl, Lori Smith, Rick Carter, and Timothy Shoppe. 25 years, Pamela Breer, Russell Belts, Dina McKenna, Stephen Holmes, and Randy Moortweet. And 30 years of service to Story County, Brent Baldiff. Want to thank all of you. We're a better place because of you. Yes, Alyssa. Can we get a picture of everybody here today up in front of the dais, please?
Mm-hmm.
All right, that takes us to agency reports. And as I indicated before, we're moving the first item in number 11 up to the top right here. So this is discussion and consideration of draft capital improvements plan. Leanne Harder. Leanne, thanks for being here.
Good morning, Leanne Harder, County Outreach and Special Projects Manager for Story County, and I do thank you very much for allowing me to be up first so that I can make my other appointment. What's before you this morning is the official action by the board on the capital improvements plan. Just some brief background, and then I'll open up for questions and input. This was started really last August, September, with the internal staff group soliciting application or information from department heads and elected officials on what projects to incorporate for this next round of capital improvements programming. That was then presented to the Board of Supervisors late last fall, and then we set it out for public comment the very early part of December. Left that open online. We tweeted it, put it on Facebook, had a blog going, and actually did not receive any public feedback. We did close that as of December 31st, but even though it was closed, it was still out there for public input. I'm not going to go over the projects per se because we did do that in November and December. What I will just indicate is we're going out to year four this year. Last year we just went out 3 years. And again, it's a capital improvements program that's set up by fiscal year. So this goes into play, if adopted, as of July 1st. Are there any general questions for me?
I would ask, take us through, simply because I know it's going to be a topic of conversation here in just a minute, the current projects that we're working on, which ones of them, so you've got potential funding sources there, which ones of the current projects we're working on have utilized TIF funding?
The Dakins Lake expansion.
Yep.
That was actually one of the first three projects that went through the TIF funding.
Right.
We did, and I'll just back up and just say what that potential funding source means on the draft CIP. That is not indicative that that is going to definitively be the funding source.
Right.
It's a way for the board to recognize these are options to consider, and so the public may be aware that that is an option that the board may use to fund. But beyond that, of the current projects, Dakins Lake expansion is the only one that truly is using the TIF funding.
So we didn't use any TIF funding for the Hickory Grove sewer.
We have not. It's in the budget.
And we haven't approved TIF funding for any of these future projects that are on here.
Correct. That would go through a whole separate public process.
Exactly. And we have to follow that process. Okay. Thank you very much. Any other questions for Leanne?
No.
All right. With that, we do have our friend Arden Greiner here who would like to talk about this. And I imagine, Arden, that TIF might come up somewhere in your remarks. You want to come up to the microphone and start by introducing yourself, even though I gave you that stellar introduction.
Thank you for the introduction. Arden Greiner from Sherman Township. Been opposed to the TIF funding all the way along. This is our economic development in the east part of the county. Lincoln, Warren, and Sherman Townships, Cole and Eskel School District. Our fear all along is taking these tax funds, tax receipts, and using it on the west side of the county for economic development and things, which is exactly what is happening.
Hasn't happened.
It was in this plan, though, it's pointed out for the ISU Research Park.
Sure.
And the paving of almost $2 million of a blacktop road up by Gilbert.
And you understand that none of that's been approved.
Correct. Okay. I'm glad you pointed that out.
Yep.
Just a minute ago. Especially with the 10-cent gas tax that was just passed.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the big boogaboo was we shouldn't be bonding for roads.
Absolutely.
And when you're taking TIF funds, you're bonding. You're taking tax receipts for the next 20 years, spending them today, and have to pay them off later. So definitely the secondary roads, two $350,000 projects, and the $1.7 million to pave by the Gilbert High School, I think
right.
That is.
Yep.
That should definitely not come from TIF funds, especially from the east side of the county.
Yep.
Plus, And this TIF fund is the first countywide TIF funds. We've had TIF projects before, but they're all localized in
Absolutely.
The city.
Mm-hmm.
So this is why this one is so touchy and problematic, is because you're countywide. You're taking money from 124 wind towers in the Colonesco School District and spending it in Ames, which I feel has their own economic growth that could be, they could fund their own projects with the expansion of Iowa State going to 35,000 students, I understand.
Mm-hmm.
And basically any TIF funding you use is the same as bonding. You're spending future tax receipts today.
Mm-hmm.
So I just stand against, I hope you don't approve this plan. It definitely, we need to look at every one of those. The ISU Research Park green space especially also.
Yeah, and understand this, so that the approval of this plan does not guarantee funding for
yeah.
these items. And if we were to use TIF for anything, and Arden, you have been really, really consistent in your feelings toward TIF all the way through, and I think most of what you said here today, you and I are going to find, and I'm talking for me personally, are going to find a lot of common ground.
Mm-hmm.
Where you and I are going to differ, and I think you're not going to be surprised by this, is the idea of the ISU Research Park and its impact countywide. And that's a conversation that if, in fact, this board determines that TIF is one of the appropriate mechanisms to fund that we're going to have as we go through the public process to determine whether we're going ahead with that. Everything else you said here today, I generally agree with. And the only thing that, and you and I have talked about this before, where I view it differently than you is, keep on wanting to divide Story County up into sections, whether it's townships or school districts or whatever. We are the Story County Board of Supervisors. It is 123 wind towers that happen to be in the Colonesco School District, but they're also in Story County. There's a couple in Nevada School District that are also in Story County. There's a few in the Roland Story School District that are also in Story County. We're viewing this as Story County boundaries, and we're not splitting the county up piece by piece. And if it's good for Story County and it's appropriate for economic development purposes, then I think this board needs to consider it. And that's a conversation that I'm sure you'll be back for. We'll try to make sure we schedule things around planting and harvest so that you can get here fairly easily, and we'll have the full conversation as we try to determine where, if anywhere, TIF is an appropriate tool.
But bringing up the school funding, I mean, Colonesco definitely has got smaller funding for their school per student than Ames does on the other side of the county.
Mm-hmm.
And like I say, to have the only TIF district of the county be us, and with all the development in Ames, nothing's ever been TIF district over there. And we're fighting against Ames Economic Development. They got 8, 10, 11 employees, you know, and what do we have over on the east side of the county? I mean, it's just ludicrous. I think I could make a point in any town in the county to be taking money from tax receipts from our side and spending it over on the other side.
Again, if you're splitting it into sides, the reality is if you want to look at where the majority of county funding comes from within Story County, it comes from that west side of the county that you keep singling out. I mean, property values on the west side of Story County are much greater than property values on the east side. We don't view it that way. It is Story County. Those dollars are all for Story County and for the good of Story County. And if it's good for, if Dakin's Lake is good for one part of Story County, it's good for all of Story County.
Yeah, we differ there.
Yeah, absolutely. I know there's lots of areas that you and I differ, and I appreciate your consistency, and I appreciate your willingness to come have the conversation. Any questions or comments?
I think the two of you, and again, I would echo what Rick has said. We do appreciate your point of view and you coming and keeping addressing these issues with us. We look forward for continuing the process. Our whole goal throughout, as this board has come together, is to look at the general overall benefit to Story County, the entire county, and looking at all the different mechanisms that are at our disposal to improve quality of life for all of its citizens and create additional opportunities that we otherwise would not have. As the community grows, as the county grows, there's going to be tremendous opportunities to expand, you know, services and events that we may not have had in the past. And so how we fund those where appropriate is going to continue to be a topic of discussion, and we'll go through all of the processes that is necessary to fully vet what should be the direction we take. But Arden, we appreciate so much you know your position and your willingness to come and share your thoughts with us.
Well, and the commitment
I wish to you to remember that this is bonding. You're borrowing future funds, and bonding's never a good idea, especially in the area of economic development. Your job, number one foremost, is to keep the lights on and keep things running in the county. In economic development, you start getting out on the fringes of your what you should be doing, and you get into some very controversial projects. Mm-hmm. And so to be bonding for economic development is a very it's a road that usually ends up bad. I mean, TIF districts started in California. They no longer do them there. Mm-hmm. Why? Mm-hmm. It's a bad road to go down.
Well, and you and I have talked about this a lot, and I'm sure we'll continue to talk about it. TIF can be a terrible thing. It is a tool. Most tools can be used appropriately and do good things, or be used inappropriately and do terrible things. And so the conversation that I hope we continue to have is, what is an appropriate use? And I understand that you tend to come down on put the tool in the toolbox and don't use it at all. I don't come down there. And the commitment I made to you, Arden, I think it was 4 years ago that I came out to your house and we sat down in your shop and had a conversation. And the commitment I made to you then is the same one I'll make to you now. I will never leave you guessing about where I stand. Right. I will be straight up with you. I'll hear what you have to say every time. I'll tell you exactly what I think, and then we'll move on from there. And hopefully you find that I'm living up to that commitment I made 4 years ago.
I know what this plan says in black and white. We're going to spend TIF. We can spend TIF funds to pave a road for Gilbert High School.
One option, no question, but it hasn't been approved is what I want to make sure
we're going down the road that I predicted we were going to go.
If
we're
spending
spending this tax money over there for green space.
We haven't spent $1 over there yet.
But this plan shows that.
This plan shows that it could happen.
It could happen.
Wow.
Absolutely.
I rest my case.
Thank you. Thank you.
Thanks, Arden.
Thank you.
Hard to convict on something that hasn't happened yet. So we need to consider the draft of the capital improvements plan. Any further questions or comments from the board?
No. I would move approval of the draft.
Second.
We have a motion and a second. Further discussion. Toot.
Aye.
Clinton.
Aye.
Sanders. Aye. Draft plan, a capital improvements plan, passes. Thanks, Leanne. Travel safely. Next item is Central Iowa Tourism, Ames Convention and Visitors Bureau report. You're not Julie.
I am not.
I love it when you're here, Allison.
I might as well be Julie because I keep coming as Julie. But, no, I'm Allison Walter with the Ames Convention and Visitors Bureau. Julie Weeks is our official representative on the Central Iowa Tourism Region for Story County. I think you've appointed her of that position a long time ago. So I'm reporting on both. I left a few things on your counter. First, just to let you know that we are very excited to be able to help host the next Central Iowa Tourism Meeting, which will be a town meeting with the Iowa Tourism Office. And they will be doing their report and spending a little time with the Central Iowa Tourism members. And we'll be hosting that at Ryman Gardens on Wednesday, March 25th, from 10 to 2. But if you're interested, you're welcome to come from 10:30 to 11:30 for that town hall portion of the meeting with the Iowa Tourism Office. Wanted to make you aware of that. And then also, the Iowa Tourism Office and the Central Iowa Tourism Region are offering a possibility of hospitality and customer service training, and there's some funding that they made available for that. The Ames Convention and Visitors Bureau did sign up to host one of those sessions in the Ames area, and we will include all of our members, anyone that's interested in sending their staff to that training. It'll be a two-hour training. Date has not been set yet, but April, May, June timeline. And they are working with Iowa State University and the Extension and Outreach Community Economic Development Division, and that's who will be doing that training. So we're looking forward to that opportunity. We included the Central Iowa Tourism Region's annual report for you. And then one other thing that they are, the Iowa Tourism Office, Travel Federation of Iowa, and each of the different regions are working on an Iowa tourism industry sector plan. And Julie is serving on the advisory committee for that. And the purpose of the inventory is to look at Iowa as a whole to understand where the strengths and opportunities for future tourism product development are located, and to understand better the marketing advantages within each niche market. So we'll be working in the next month to complete an inventory, and that will fall on Julie's responsibility as the Story County representative, but we will be in touch with all the different organizations within Story County to fill out that inventory so that we can use that for future planning. And then also, last time I was here, I mentioned our annual meeting, but couldn't tell you a lot of numbers because they weren't public yet. So we did bring you a hard copy of the annual report and just opened it to a page that I wanted to note some of the numbers. The direct spending by overnight visitors last year was over $99 million in Story County. That's a number for Ames, but it sort of covers all of Story County. So $99 million in direct spending. And then also the hotel motel tax revenue, for the Ames Convention and Visitors Bureau and the City of Ames. It continues to increase, and we are just really looking forward to, having that, you know, that number continue to increase in the future. And you've heard me talk about our website and our Facebook page, and we manage the information booth on University Boulevard, so a few statistics on that. The one that blows me away is that we had over 6,700 visitors stop in that Ames ISU information booth on University Boulevard. It's over 20 people a day stopping in that little hut there on University Boulevard. So that's a big piece of outreach for us. So with that, oh, and then I included the 2015 wall calendar so you can see all the events that will be happening. Open to any questions.
I love the wall calendar.
It's amazing when you see those.
Absolutely.
Everything that's going on.
It's a nice Allison, visual. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
You're
so
welcome.
Much.
Thank you.
Look forward.
Thank you, Allison.
Mm-hmm.
See you next time.
Absolutely. Tell Julie we said hi.
I will.
Next item is Boys and Girls Club of Story County, Erica Peterson. Hi, Erica.
Hello.
Right. So thanks for having me here again this morning. So I would still like to say I do like to still call myself the new CEO of the Boys and Girls Club, because when I was up here a year ago, I was just fresh in my seat. So, but thank you once again, not only for having me here today, but for your support, especially through the asset funding. That has been a very valuable asset, pun intended, for the club. In the 2014-15 fiscal year, we have been able to draw down almost all of those funds, and then we just received our asset recommendation for the 15-16 year, and we are very excited for the increase, and so we thank you. Mm-hmm. Thank you, Deb. Thank you for that. I'm going to dive into a little bit some of our numbers from this last year. Wayne, these will sound familiar from our gala on Saturday night. But
yeah, I saw pictures from that. That looked like a fun time.
We had a great time. Well, hopefully you'll be there next year.
Absolutely. It coincided with our employee recognition dinner.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. So, so we served over 29,000 meals and snacks in 2014. Again, just to help kind of combat some of that food insecurity that's very real for a lot of our members. We served 601 youth in that time period as well. 417 of those are actual registered members. 184 are other youth served is how we qualify them. So they are not registered members of the club, but they receive services that we're able to provide. So whether that's YSS youth who use the Boys and Girls Club during the day for their recreation activities, or whether it's youth that we served in the United Way Food for Thought program in the summer. We help to provide enrichment and literacy-based activities over the summer by collaborating with United Way and other agencies. So we were really excited to be able to really start to provide additional outreach beyond just the Ames Club. We were open for service for 240 days, which is quite a few. We are virtually open every Monday through Friday throughout the entire school year. During holiday breaks and during summer breaks, we're open all day long serving kids. So we're really able to complement what the schools are doing for academic achievement by providing that extra homework help, by providing tutoring, by providing structured learning and fun activities throughout the afternoon and then during the day as well. Really, really exciting. On January 20th, we launched our Nevada pilot program. So we are now serving children 2 days a week at the Nevada Middle School. Again, offering that homework help, offering a science and an art club. We're also doing some leadership some character and some service development programs as well. So the kids are loving it. We're hearing great things from schools and the parents as well. So that's just in its budding stages right now, but so far it's great, and we will be continuing that in the fall if all continues to go well and expanding it as much as we can. So 90 is the decibel level that it reaches in the Ames Club in our games room. So that is definitely in need. I would like to clarify, that's not the sustaining sound level. That's usually about 81 or so. At 85, OSHA requires hearing protection. So when it's peaking at 90, it's very loud. So the Ames leadership, one of the Ames leadership teams is working on a project right now to do a little bit of renovation in that games room. One, to provide an additional programming space so we can do a little bit more of those character and academic support programmings, but then also to help with that sound level to bring it down so it's a little bit more manageable. We employ 17 people currently at the club. They are all incredibly mission-driven and dedicated individuals. A lot of them are Iowa State students or Iowa State grads, and they are they're there for the kids. And you can really see that in how they interact and just in their commitment. So we've launched 4 new programs at the Ames Club. This year, we have a dance club that is a hit with the kiddos. We've heard from parents that they are very, very grateful that we're able to provide that because they would not be able to afford dance for their children otherwise. So it gives them that opportunity to have that experience. Our Keystone Club, which is our teen leadership and service group, that has been relaunched. And so currently they are doing different service projects that they organize, they lead, they develop. They did a food drive in December for families, and they're currently working on a couple of others. We started a cooking club just a couple of weeks ago. That's a Friday afternoon hit. Obviously, anything that involves food is always everybody enjoys. But what's really great about this is they're using measurements, and so they're having to use their math skills on a regular basis. So it's another way that we're really emphasizing that academic success while they're having fun. They don't even know it, so it's really cool. And we've just we're now partnering with ISU Extension with 4-H, so we're offering 4-H at the club two days a month. So really excited about the new programs that are coming to the Ames Club. We now have our endowment at the Story County Community Foundation. So it's 2 legacy options for people, either with an Endow Iowa account or also with the a more traditional endowment account. And then finally, and I would not be doing my job if I didn't do the plug, it only takes one person to make a difference. So whether that is any one of you on our board or any one of you in our audience, please consider contributing time, talent, or treasure to the club. We would definitely appreciate that. Are there any questions?
Just Erica, we're glad you're
just
here.
Just a clarification. I thought you said 17 number of employees, and your sheet here says 11. Did I hear that wrong?
It is only 11.
Okay.
It is only 11.
I thought I heard 17, and I wanted to just clarify that.
Currently only 11, yes.
Okay. Good. But no, thank you again for your leadership and the great things that you do. And it's always exciting when I come to the board meetings and see not only your enthusiasm, but the enthusiasm of the board members as well. And last night, Saturday night, the gala was a great example of the tremendous community outreach, that we have. It just blew me away. And I think the program, having passed and, members and the people that we honored, talk about, the value of the club and what it meant to them, was a very special, event. And, I want to thank you for your leadership in that as well. I think people who walked away from that, really came away with a tremendous positive feeling about, what Boys and Girls Club of, Story County does for the boys and girls and youth of our community. So thanks for your continued leadership.
Thank you.
Well said. Thank you.
Felt bad afterwards. That's when my rest of my cold kicked in afterwards. So it caused me to miss the basketball game all yesterday and work yesterday. It's trying to recover, but it was worth it.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
All right, next is consideration of the February 24th minutes.
Move approval.
Second.
Corrections or changes? Toot.
Aye.
Clinton?
Aye.
Sanders? Aye. Minutes pass. Personnel actions as listed.
Move approval.
Second.
Motion and a second. Toot.
Aye.
Clinton?
Aye.
Sanders, aye. Personnel actions pass. Consent agenda, please add utility permit 1550.
Move approval with noted changes.
Second.
Clinton.
Aye.
Toot.
Aye.
Sanders, aye. Consent agenda passes. Public hearing item, second consideration of ordinance number 236, amending sections of 86. I'll just leave it at that.
Many sections. Good morning.
Good morning.
You recall last week we did review this. We haven't received any further public comment from last week. The changes that were requested by the board regarding the removal of the allowance of poultry, or at least allowing them in our zoning ordinance, the verbiage in our zoning ordinance, we have removed that. The stuff that was attached to the agenda does reflect that removal, and everything is updated. From there, I'm hesitant to say I would waive third consideration based off the changes that we're having. However, with next week being the budget hearing, I'm not sure if you want to have that third consideration with that budget hearing or if you want to wait a week to do it. I'll leave that up to the board to decide. If there's any additional questions of me, I would be happy to answer them.
Well, it's something that unless we hear something, it's going to take a lot of time. You know, so I don't think that it would hurt to just go ahead and, since it is an ordinance change, that we
And Wayne, I feel pretty strongly that we need to have the third consideration in this case simply because we made an amendment
right.
to what was proposed,
right.
and so I want to give as much time as possible for people to weigh in.
Correct.
And I would think that we probably won't receive much right. public comment, but I've been surprised in the past before, so you never know.
Great. Good. So,
other questions, thoughts?
No.
All right. Then in that case, I will open the public hearing regarding Ordinance 236 and ask if there is anyone who would like to address this. Seeing no one moving to the microphone, I'll close the public hearing and turn to the board for action.
Okay. Go ahead, Paul.
I'll move approval of changes to Ordinance 86, Chapter 86. On the second reading, set the third and final reading for March 10th.
Okay, second.
Motion, a second. Further discussion. Toot.
Aye.
Clinton.
Aye.
Sanders. Aye. So set, and we're setting the third and final consideration for next Tuesday, the 10th. Good.
Okay.
Let's see. We dealt with the first item on additional items already, so that takes us to discussion and consideration of Heartland Senior Services' request to reallocate $7,450.52 from Friendly Visitor Services to Outreach Services. Deb Shildroth. Hi, Deb.
Good morning.
Mm-hmm.
I'm Deb Shildroth with Community Services, and Heartland Senior Services has made a request, and this was reviewed by ASCET during their February meeting. And essentially, it's asking to reallocate funds for fiscal year 15 using the general basic funds from the Friendly Visitor Service to.
Make sure it's on.
Is it on?
No.
Pull it closer.
The other mic. Okay. But this is my seat.
Okay.
All right.
Would you like me to start over? Okay. About a year ago, Heartland had made a similar request to move dollars from Friendly Visitor to outreach, and it has to do with the continued limited utilization of Friendly Visitor. Heartland meets with the clients and then has to find a good volunteer match for the Friendly Visitor to go to the client's home. Volunteers are available, but again, it's just finding that right match. And they're also seeing clients just not be interested in having someone coming to their home. And so they feel that through their outreach services, if they can still talk to clients about this as an option, it might be used on a limited basis for the remainder of this fiscal year. This request was made to the city and the county, so Heartland will continue to receive United Way dollars for the service. But they feel that they provide better services to the clients through outreach versus the Friendly Visitor. And this is just a decline in the service over the last couple of years. And then moving into fiscal year 16, which is not part of what you're considering today, but in fiscal year 16, they want to fold Friendly Visitor into outreach service and just have outreach, period. And since we don't have a contract right now for fiscal year 16, we won't deal with that part of the request at this point in time. We'll deal with that during the contracting period.
And it makes sense to me. That was going to be my question. It makes sense to me that moving, we wouldn't keep dealing with a request like this every year. Now, this is 2 years in a row that we've dealt with it. And so it makes sense to me for the asset team to take a look and see, does it make sense to roll all of it together? With that said, questions about reallocating these requested funds?
No, it's gone through the process that for review and evaluation, and the recommendation has come forth, and I think it's appropriate for us to move forward and approve this.
I'll move approval of the Heartland request to reallocate the $7,450.52.
Second.
We have a motion and a second. Further discussion? Toot.
Aye.
Clinton.
Aye.
Sanders. Aye. It is reallocated. Thanks, Deb.
All right. Thank you.
Next is still Deb, and it's discussion and consideration of May 1st, 2015 as the effective date for transition of services from Story County Community Life to Optime Life Services.
Okay. Great.
That's the item. We've been having weekly meetings with CLP management staff and Optime's management team in setting up the structure to transition the services, look at client statistics, personnel, the assets, the buildings and the vehicles and that sort of thing. And Optime is feeling optimistic that they could have those services in place and ready to take over as of May 1st. That was something that had been mentioned in their budget proposal that they had submitted. They were looking at either April or May, depending on how the conversations went once we started meeting with them. So, but they are looking at being able to assume that May 1st. They are going to have two meet-and-greet sessions this Wednesday at Community Life at 3 o'clock and then a repeat at 5:30. That was previously scheduled for last week, but due to the weather, they bumped it to this week. And then they are also having a meeting with Community Life employees on Thursday to talk about the vacancies or positions that will be open for employees to consider. So they are moving along quite nicely.
Questions for Deb? We have Chris Sorensen with us today, who is running a lot of the transition work on behalf of the county for CLP. Chris, I didn't know if you had anything you'd like to add since you're here. I don't want to put you on the spot, but if you had anything you'd like to add, come right up. Okay. Questions for Deb or Chris or anybody else?
No, just glad to see that the process is moving along smoothly, and Optima is, of course, receiving all the support that they need, and working with you and our representatives and Deb as far as making this transition smooth and effective. So I wanted to certainly thank them as well for reaching out and working so quickly with us. And I think the process that we've outlined is going to help us move forward with a very smooth and timely transition and maintain quality services for the clients that deserve nothing but the best. So I want to thank them for that.
Mm-hmm. Yep. That's been our goal all along, so I'm glad we've reached this point. So
do we need any motion here to approve?
Yes,
I would move that we approve the May 1st, 2015, as the effective date for the transition of services from Story County Community Life to Optima Life Services.
Second. We have a motion, a second. Further discussion. Clinton.
Aye.
Toot.
Aye.
Sanders. Aye. May 1st is set as the effective date for transition of services from CLP to Optima. Next, discussion and consideration of Optima Life Services, alternative use of the retention pay in supporting the CICS region with negotiating agreement. Deb Shildroth.
Right. Okay. And this is on the heels of what you just approved with bumping up the start date for Optima to take over the services. Optima then, they were aware of the retention pay program that was in place for the CLP employees, and they then submitted a proposal to have those dollars transferred to them for any CLP employee that would accept a position with Optima and become an Optima Life Services employee. And that would take effect May 1st. We don't have a hard and fast dollar amount attached to that because, A, we don't know which employees will be interested in changing employment and then which employees would actually be offered jobs. But back last fall when the retention plan program was approved, the region took a look at it and had approved up to $300,000 for the retention pay. So we would guess that it, you know, could be at least half of that then that might be allocated to Optima then to pay those employees as an incentive, but the employees would have to remain employed through June 30th in order to collect those funds.
So instead of receiving the retention bonus that they would have received had CLP continued to operate from May 1st through June 30th, now those employees, if they choose to take their employment to Optima, basically providing very similar services to the clients, there would be a bonus for them those first 2 months to see how it's going to work out with Optima.
Right. They would get the retention pay. Story County employment would end April 30th for those individuals, and they stayed until April 30th. They would get into retention pay through that date. Then if they take a job with Optima, then they would get continued pay in the form of incentive pay, but it would follow the same structure or formula that was spelled out in the retention pay program. They would get that then for May and June. So they would essentially be collecting all of their retention pay. It's just the last 2 months it would be as an Optima employee. Those employees who opt not to apply for a position with Optima or may not be offered a position with Optima would still collect their retention pay through April 30th.
Which is what we talked about all the way through. I want to make sure if this is approved and it goes forward to putting together an agreement with the region and the county and Optima, very important to me that it be a dollar-for-dollar pass-through to the employees. I don't want to see any administrative fees or anything like that. This was set up for the employees. And in my mind, if it's going to continue on, it needs to follow strictly the employees. And so, Jessica, I'd ask you and Deb just to make sure that that's something that is very strongly stated in there.
Right. Yes.
Okay. And the other thing I want to point out too, the incentive pay would also be based on hours worked, just like the retention pay.
Right.
is.
Yeah, I'd like to see something that mirrors. I mean, granted, it's not going to be a county or a regional thing once the money is passed through, but I'd like to see something that's as consistent as possible if we're putting this together. Mm-hmm. Further discussion or questions for Deb?
No.
This was approved, and it says in the letter that it was approved last Monday at the region.
And you attended that regional meeting since Wayne was out of town.
Yes. We had a good discussion about it, and it was almost a unanimous vote, missed by one. So.
Good.
Okay.
Probably appropriate since you were at that regional meeting for you to be the guy making the motion here.
And I will make the motion to approve the Optimate's proposal for using the alternative retention pay for employees that choose to transfer to Optima from CLP.
Second.
We have a motion and a second. Further discussion? Toot.
Aye.
Clinton.
Aye.
Sanders. Aye. It is approved to negotiate the agreement. Deb, I just ask that you and Jessica be heavily involved in getting that put together. Thank you very much. Let's see. Do we get more Deb Shildroth? We do.
Mm-hmm.
Outstanding. Discussion and consideration of acceptance of the Demand Response Service Transportation Report. Deb Shildroth.
Right. This is a result of a number of months' work with a transportation task force that was put together through a coordinated effort with Sherry Kairos from SciRide, Melissa Munt with the City of Ames, myself, and Jean Cressy with United Way of Story County. And then the city and the county funded a facilitator, Nancy France, to guide the discussions of the task force. The task force involved human service agencies and transportation providers, so including HRDA, but also RSVP and of course, then SciRide, since those are the agencies that provide the bulk of the transportation here within Story County. You have two documents in front of you. The smaller one is the executive summary, which does do a nice job of outlining the larger document. And the larger document contains the full action plan that has all 23 identified areas or recommendations. But we've skinnied that down to themes and priorities. And there are essentially three themes that came out of the meetings. And those themes involve communication, expectations, and limited resources. So communication would involve improvements by HRDA and with HRDA from the human service agencies, and that would benefit the service so that clients can more easily access information and address their travel needs. This includes discussions about the reservation system, telephones, email processes, and protocols. So that's one priority area. Expectations. The community expectations exceed HRDA's current budget and current charge. This is evidenced by 12 of the 23 recommended actions being beyond HRDA's current ability to provide the service. So I think, again, we're bringing people together in understanding that the way the service was provided prior to HRDA's direct provision and the way it's provided today are two very different things. And there very much is more a public purpose or public focus on how HRDA is providing the transportation, and that is evidenced by their numbers in terms of the numbers of riders being more of the public versus only those who may be elderly or disabled. So we had a lot of discussion around that. And then the third priority is limited resources. The discussions identified staffing, primarily driver shortages, funding for additional buses, and for additional services as major constraints that would require a combined community effort to address. And I'm pleased to say that the bus driver crisis has improved. We're not quite at the level of where things want to be, but we definitely have made improvements over the last several months, so that's a good thing. Throughout the process, the task force identified four priorities that they believe will provide the largest and most immediate impact. And those four priorities include mutually agree that transportation is a partnership and everyone will work collaboratively together to resolve the issues. That's a big one. We'll incorporate enhanced technology in the buses and vans for safety and passenger satisfaction. Just a side note to that, HRDA received some grant dollars through United Way of Story County to provide 10 tablets in the buses, and that will help with communication and with the transportation manifest. So that's a step in the right direction. Another priority is employing and retaining staff and drivers and improving efficiencies with telephone and email systems for passengers. So again, part of that communication package. The next steps for this would be upon acceptance of the plan, the task force members will be divided up into subcommittees to begin the implementation plans and identifying resources in the four priority areas. A question with this, and this isn't part of the motion today, but is do we continue with involving the facilitator? And that's something that Melissa Munt and I need to have a continued conversation on, so that would be something that I would bring back at a later date in terms of recommendations. I think it's important to point out that the acceptance of this plan does not commit funding. We're just accepting the plan and knowing that the subcommittee still has work to do and that recommendations and funding requests may follow as a result of that continued work by the committee. The plan has been reviewed by the Transit Board of Trustees. I'm bringing it to this board today. The City Council, I believe, looks at it tonight at their meeting, and then Wayne and I talked about taking it to the HRTA board at their March meeting. And United Way will be talking with their transportation collaboration about it as well.
Mm-hmm.
Any questions or comments?
Well, I know it's not for our action today, but my understanding was Nancy France was outstanding through this process as a facilitator. It seems to me that it makes a lot of sense to look at continuing to have her serve as we look at the implementation of some of these things. And so I'll be very interested to hear what the rest of the conversation looks like and where we go.
She did an excellent job, and she's very efficient and very good with keeping everybody on task.
Mm-hmm. Good. Good. Other questions for Deb?
Nope. Don't have any. Good. So what do you need? I would move that we approve the acceptance of the demand and response service transportation report as submitted.
Second.
We have a motion and a second. Deb, I just want to thank you for your work and all your partners' work on this. This is a good first step. It is, however, a first step. Now the implementation of whatever, clearly we do have funding issues as we start talking about some of this, but we don't need to get to the end of this report and think it's the end. This needs to be the beginning. So thank
and
you very much.
And I think I'd just like to use this time to see, I just saw over the weekend while I was in D.C. that Melissa Munt will be leaving Ames in her role.
Mm-hmm.
She's just been an outstanding cooperative, collaborative person to work with throughout this process and on several other aspects of the asset program. And so she's going to be sorely missed, but I know that she's looking forward to other challenges and opportunities in the greater Kansas City area. So,
well, there's got to be somebody else with the last name Munt. I mean, isn't that who they hire for that position in the city of Ames now?
Or something similar to that.
we have a motion and a second. Clinton?
Aye.
Toot?
Aye.
Sanders? Aye. The demand response report is accepted. Thank you, Deb.
Thank you.
Discussion and consideration of revised community services director job description, Alyssa Wignall. Good morning, Alyssa.
Good morning. A while back, there was a reorganization to implement a director of external operations and county services, and with that, also the director of or the community services director job description needed to be revised. The parts of that was currently within that job description that now is part of that director of external operations is no longer in there. So I worked with Deb Shildroth, and we went through and revised the job description, scored out, and at a grade 14, which is where I kind of anticipated it to score out. As far as other director positions within the county, it falls right within there. There isn't really too much more to say about that. This is just the normal procedure. When we do this, we come to get the new revised job description approved by the board.
Yeah, so, I mean, basically, with the reorganization, our former community service director who just sat here for multiple items. When she moves over, she's keeping some of the work that she has as community service director. So that in essence changes what that job is going to do, and that's what this reflects. You're comfortable with everything in here, scope of work and where it scores out?
Correct. And the education requirements are a little bit different than the former. It does require a bachelor's and still requires extensive experience. I think that's extremely important for this position, especially with all of the changes with regionalization that have happened and are going to continue to happen. That's what, you know, Deb and I had some discussions, and that's where we felt that this job needed to be.
And this position will report to Deb?
Correct.
And this would be effective July 1st of 2015?
Correct.
Questions for Alyssa?
I move approval of the revised community service director job description.
Second.
We have a motion and a second. Further discussion. Toot.
Aye.
Clinton.
Aye.
Sanders. Aye. It passes. Thanks, Alyssa. Consideration of recommended consultant for the C2C project. Charlie DeSalle.
Step in for Leanne since she had to get out early. As the board will recall, we did receive a total of 5 proposals for the C2C project. Those proposals coming from JEO Consulting. They're out of Omaha. They do have an Ankeny office. We did receive one from Place Dynamics. They're out of New Berlin, Wisconsin. WSB and Associates out of Minneapolis. MSA Professionals out of Ankeny. And then RDG Planning and Design. They're out of Des Moines. They do have a satellite office in Ames. After reviewing those 5 proposals, the C2C project did invite the 3 firms who scored highest on our initial review to do in-person presentations. Those in-person presentations took place last Tuesday in the afternoon in this boardroom. After that, the C2C project did again discuss the proposals. We did come to somewhat of a consensus that we are recommending the project be awarded to MSA Professional Services, the firm out of Ankeny. Furthermore, the C2C project respectfully requested the board ask the county attorney's office to begin contract discussions with MSA Professional Services and bring back a contract for consideration by the board in 3 weeks on March 24th. And if there are any questions, I would be happy to answer them.
No, I don't have any. I had a conversation with Leanne, I think, late last week. So.
Yeah, I appreciate the work that that you and the group did in going through these, and appreciate the recommendation.
Right. Yeah, I don't have any issues.
Okay.
I would move that we accept the recommendation of the team for the C2C project and go with MSA Professional Services, and then also that the county attorney's office work up a contract.
Second.
We have a motion and a second. Further discussion. Toot.
Aye.
Clinton.
Aye.
Sanders. Aye. Project awarded. And Jessica, we ask that you go to work on getting the contract negotiated. No departmental reports today. Other report discussion on bridge replacement on 250th Street over East Indian Creek. Darren Moon. Hi, Darren. So prices are way, way up, huh?
Seems to be a consistent theme this year for some reason. This is a bit out of the ordinary for DOT-let projects. Our normal process, we get a contract back from the DOT and we send it to the contractor. We normally don't have a reason to reject a bid. This one was a bit high, so I wanted to cover it with the board before we send it out. This is not an action item on the board agenda, so we have 2 options here today. I see one. You could either direct me to put it on next week's agenda for an action item, or you could possibly reject all bids at that point, or you could just direct me today just to proceed as normal and send that contract out, and then it'll come back, and the board will approve that contract when it comes back signed. This project was let February 17th, again, through the DOT. We received the contract yesterday. We have a bit of a time frame issue. The DOT likes to see those contracts back within 30 days, so it makes it a little difficult to do mailing it to the contractor, getting it back, then getting it on the board agenda. So we have a bit of a time frame issue, but the bid came in at $797,000. which was 29% over our final estimate. Bit of a caveat on the estimate. Our bridge consultant for this, their original estimate they submitted to us was $690,000. Based on some of our local bridges we've done in the past few years, we discussed some bid items, and we convinced them to bring the estimate down. In hindsight, their estimate was probably pretty good at $690,000, and that would be 15% is what the bid ended up being over their estimate. A new process the DOT also does with federal aid projects, they do their own independent internal estimates now. They do not share them with us, unfortunately. I tried to get that from them. They said all they could tell me was it was very close to our estimate. Some other things I did, I went back and looked at some recent DOT lettings for this type of bridge. It's a slab bridge. You either have a slab or a beam type bridge. Sometimes different contractors like slabs. Going back to October, there was three slab bridges. November, there was two. One of them was Story County's, our Berry Patch bridge. December had three. January had two, and February had nine, the one we were in. Just to give an idea of the number of slab bridges that were let this winter. And then there's two more planned for March. The concerning part to me was the number of bidders. Just to give you a little history, Milford 7 bridge we did 2 years ago, we had 11 bidders. Indian Creek 9 we did last year, we had 10 bidders. And then this Indian Creek Berry Patch Road, we had 5 bidders, which was the most of any bridge got out of this entire list. Lot of them had two bidders. Ours had two bidders only. So our low bid was $797,000. The next bid was $868,000. And the low bidder is the contract that's doing our Berry Patch Bridge right now, Graves Construction. And I did notice they picked up two other bridges in that February letting, at least two more. So I don't know what's going on. If we lost a lot of bridge contractors the past couple years with the economy, I don't know. But that concerns me, and I don't know if holding on to this and letting it again next year would get any better bids because of this situation.
Have you had an opportunity to check around the state with other counties and regarding this? I know you have close contact with the Engineers Association, but is this problem more than just for us right now?
I just know the high prices. That's the only thing I checked with all these lettings is the price per square foot. Ours was high. I don't know why that happened either. Ours was $217 a square foot. There was some 166 square foot, 135, and then 116. Our Berry Patch Bridge was $110 a square foot. This is double that. There is some reasons for a higher price bridge here I can point out to you. This bridge has a 45-degree skew. That generally creates higher prices. Contractors have a hard time building those. They're harder to build. But that's required just to the angle of the stream hits the road. We had to use some larger pile due to the weak soils in the area. We don't know what the soils are until they do the soil borings, which comes towards the end of design. And we didn't hit bedrock. We usually hit bedrock a lot of times at 50, 60 foot deep. We did not. So a lot of these piles are 80, 90 foot long, and they're larger pile because of the weak soils in the area. That's stuff we couldn't predict. We did have a large amount of revetment in the area. That's the riprap rock. That was $50,000 of the total bid amount, and that's an item we could cut back a little, maybe save $10,000, $20,000 in that item if we would like to do that. Then we have dirt work. Bridge contractors like to build bridges. They don't like the dirt work. We had to raise that grade to 2.5 feet and bring it up because of the hydraulics. We originally thought that might be 6 or 7 feet, so I'm glad we ended up with only 2 or 3 feet, but that was another reason for the increase in some of our costs. But in general, the square foot price was pretty high for the bridge, and I don't have answers for that. We did narrow the bridge down to 24 foot. Most counties are doing the 30 foot wide ones, but we originally budgeted this in 2015, assuming FEMA was paying for it because they originally said they would. They only pay for 24 foot wide bridges. That's why it went to 24, and we thought we'd save some money doing that. Other information. What will this cost us if we accept this bid local dollar-wise? At this point, I'm assuming this money would come out of FY16, next year's budget. I know this contractor's already working on our bridge, and they picked up other bridges. I don't see it happening. It's possible. So if it happened out of this year, we would need an additional $77,000 of local dollars put into this. Just to give you a rough idea what the fuel tax would bring to us, that's going to come immediately. So I assume 3 months instead of four, because we might lag a month on that money coming in. If we just got 3 months of fuel tax, the additional 10 cents would be $154,000 we have yet to spend out of this fiscal year. So it'd easily cover that. If it carried over to FY16, we actually bumped our dollar amounts up in our FY16 that we budgeted because we knew the costs were going to be higher than we originally planned because FEMA backed out. We'd only need an additional $50,000 to accept this bit of local dollars. But we do have to kick in about an additional $200,000 of federal aid bridge money out of our account there. And we do have the room to do that in our bridge account. We go into the negative a little bit, but that's not a bad thing to borrow ahead in that. It's almost encouraged.
Yeah, I mean, for me, what it comes down to is we only had two bidders. The per square foot cost was substantially higher. I mean, I know you got a couple of reasons for why it would be somewhat higher, yeah, but it's substantially higher. And so I'm just curious if this is one of those times that it's worth holding out and getting it rebid to see where we come in. I mean, clearly it's going to be higher than we estimated, and yeah, and so maybe we're arguing over splitting hairs, but it just seems to me like we're not getting as good a price here as maybe we should be getting. Mm-hmm. Do we hold out and hope we get a better one, or do we go ahead and move ahead? And then the other question I had is, now Jasper County has their own bridge crew, right?
Right.
Great. Small bridges.
Small.
That's what I was going to ask. They wouldn't do a bridge like this even in Jasper County. Okay. No.
Actually, you can't legally. You'd have to bid against it. It has to be under a certain threshold. Anything over 40, 50 feet, you really can't do it as a county unless you bid against the contractors, and that's kind of an odd situation.
Okay.
So if we don't do this now, we'll be back here next year this time.
Yeah, it's not a huge deal to relet a project, so that's not a big deal, but I can't guarantee lower prices by doing that. And
well, the other thing is we don't have a bridge anymore that's a mile north of this one.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, that's going to bring that up.
Between Highway 30 and almost down to Maxwell to get across the Indian Creek.
I'm convinced this bridge needs to be replaced. Whether we wait a year or not, that's where I wanted some feedback. I'm kind of on the fence what to do here.
I mean, I am too. The problem is now that we don't have any way to get across there at all since that other one had to be closed. Do we hope that this additional revenue from the gas tax is going to, is it going to lure some of these guys back out of the woods to start bidding on these projects again?
Yeah.
Or
is it going to mean that everybody is starting to do the projects and
right,
there's more
right,
work?
There's more work,
and then they're not going to be.
I have that concern too.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, I mean, I think at the end of the day, even with where we've seen a couple other projects go, I think clearly we're not talking about hundreds of thousands of dollars of savings here. If we rebid it, you're talking more like, you could maybe see $50,000 in savings, but you could also see $50,000 or more of an increase if you rebid it. Paul, I think you hit the nail on the head that this is a bridge we need.
Yeah.
I mean, it's from Highway 30 almost down to Maxwell to be able to get across.
Right.
That's not a reasonable span. With a couple of the bridges that we've had that we've had issues with right there in the area here recently.
Right.
Maybe timing is of the essence, and timing is worth something, and so maybe the right thing to do is go ahead and move ahead.
Yeah.
Are we happy so far with the work that we're seeing out of this group down on Berry Patch?
Yeah, we've used them in previous years too. Yeah.
Yeah. No, I appreciate both Rick and Paul's analysis on this, and it comes down to right now the need for this particular area, and I think by delaying it, it's just going to impact even more for you know, that part of the county. And I think if we can see some savings through the fuel tax, we've got an opportunity to fill those gaps. And while I'm always interested in maybe rejecting a bid with the hopes that we could get more bidders down the road, but I potentially see, with knowing what's happening statewide, that there's going to be a lot more other contractors bidding on things. That means there could be delays in when we could get to, you know, some of the things that we've got going. So if we're at this process right now, maybe we ought to go ahead and move forward, but continue to do the due diligence that you guys have always done. But it is unusual any time that your estimate and the estimate of the consultant is that far off. But, you know, this is the reality of where we are today, and I guess I would be more inclined to go ahead and move forward with the project that we have.
And
I think the concern I would have about waiting, I mean, we did see some savings on some projects here a few years ago when the economy was in the tank
and guys
were hungry.
That's some of the reasoning behind some of these increases. We got really good price. We've come to find out that North Dakota box culvert we did. That's why we're seeing the big increase in the box culvert we let this year, because we got such a good price.
A good price last
year on that one. And the Berry Patch, we got, that was $100 a square foot. That's one of the lowest in the whole letting this winter. So we've gotten some really good price on other projects, so that's a positive.
I'm just not optimistic that we're going to see a huge savings by waiting a year.
I think you're right. I think both you and Wayne are on the money. Our primary function is to make sure that when it comes to secondary roads, is make sure we have the infrastructure that we need. This is clearly we've identified. This is one we need. We need it even more so today than we did a year ago, and so I'm with you guys. I think we need to move. My recommendation would be that we have Darren move ahead as he would normally move ahead on a project like this, and we not put any more strings on it. But that's really up to us as a board.
Yeah, yep.
I think that's the direction we need to go.
With you just moving ahead as you would normally move ahead, do you need a motion from this board? Do we need to take some kind of formal action?
No, it will come back signed from the contractor, and at that point, the board takes action to sign the contract.
Okay. All right. Yeah.
Contracts are generally on the consent agenda.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. All set? Yeah. Okay. Thanks, Darren.
Thank you.
Liaison assignments. Wayne.
Pass.
Paul Toot.
I'll pass.
I'll pass. Public forum number two is an opportunity for members of the public to comment on items not on this agenda. We're not going to take any action because we can't, but we might in the future. Anybody? Okay, announcements from the supervisors. Wayne.
Just very quickly, more or less as a heads up, and this is kind of for Gavin's benefit as well and for you two guys. I understand in Ames there's going to be a FEMA flood public meeting today at the Sheman Building from 3 to 5. And while in D.C. last week, as I serve on the Iowa Association of Counties and NACO Environmental Energy and Land Use Steering Committee, considerable discussion of our committee was on the executive order establishing a federal flood risk management standards. And I assume this is going to be part of the outreach and the discussion that the city of Ames will be impacted. And what I'm concerned, what I will be interested in is seeing if they will identify what are the guidelines and the rules that are probably going to be brought forth. But the National Association of Counties Environmental Energy and Land Use Steering Committee did go on record opposing the implementation of the executive order urging the President and the Congress to direct all federal agencies to halt implementation until there could be more outreach and consultation with counties and jurisdictions. But we feel that one size doesn't fit all, and while there were some members that talked about what was in the proposed legislation would be a benefit to them, others saw it could be a very negative. And so without this consultation, they were very reluctant to wholeheartedly endorse these changes, because this change is going to change how cities, counties, municipalities look at flood mitigation and things of this nature, and what role FEMA will have in determining whether or not they can go on. What I'm told, these will be guidelines. It doesn't say that they will be able to prevent building in floodplains, but they will certainly be given certain guidance in terms of why building in floodplains could be more detrimental than anything else. So I'm going to try. I hope I'll feel well enough to sit in on that meeting. And there were some other things that I would just say. We had an excellent visit with each of our congressional delegations and highlighted several key things. We were very pleased. Both Senator Grassley and Congressman King, we probably had the longest time with them that we've ever had in terms of addressing issues impacting us. I'll just mention the topics, and at a later time, if you want, I can share this information with you. We talked about transportation funding, told what was happening in Iowa with the gas tax, and we were asking that the Highway Trust Fund that Congress continued to pass a long-term extension so that we could plan at the local level about our transportation needs. And obviously they were in agreement with that. However, they pretty much assured us that more than likely we're going to have a short-term extension, a one-year extension like what's happening over the last few years. We also talked about the tax-exempt municipal bonds and why this was critical to counties, and we were opposed to any attempts to eliminate or limit the tax-exempt status of those bonds. And there is a proposal in the President's budget and others that status, tax-exempt status, would be taken away. And then we talked about the waters of the U.S., asking again we feel that the EPA is a little overreaching in terms of its Clean Water Act, and where it's trying to identify the ditches and roadsides things there, and the permitting process would need to be taken place. So I think Darren and our conservation people would be in agreement that if the EPA is allowed to move forward with the proposed legislation under the Clean Water Act, it would not be a good thing for the state of Iowa, with the number of drainage ditches we have and so forth. And the last thing we talked about with them was the support for the authority for counties to collect the existing sales tax on the Internet use. You know, most of the people on Main Street are at about a 7% disadvantage. A person could go in, look at something on Main Street, like it, go out and use the Internet and actually purchase it and save that 7% increase. And we felt that if we're really trying to help local communities and businesses, this is the fairest way to deal with that. I don't think they think that anything is going to happen. They all recognize it probably is, but there's an awful strong lobbying group out there that they said we don't know if that's going to become a reality. But all in all, it was a wonderful time. The weather didn't cooperate, but I appreciate the opportunity not only to represent Story County there, but the Iowa Association of Counties and at the NACO conference.
Well, we're appreciative of you representing us on that. That, you know, this group made a decision early on that we'd only send one of us. I think you're exactly the right guy to go and represent us, and we appreciate the report back, and hope you get to feeling better.
Yep.
Paul.
Just want to wish the Nevada girls good luck this afternoon in their first round at this.
You going to head down?
Woo! I'm probably not going to head down. My son's down there, and I'll be better off.
And they have Red Oak?
Yes.
All right.
Okay.
See if they can go get the Red Oaks. Nothing from me.
Move adjournment.
Second.
All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
We are adjourned.